and 05. Those, both of those two cases were eventually removed to the federal system and consolidated before Judge Kendall.
Now, how concretely do you believe you were prejudiced by Judge Kendall's decision to consolidate the two lawsuits?
Okay. The two cases have separate defendants, even though they are police officers, they are separate people. The one incident that took place on May 19th took place outside on the street, and that involved the three police officers that made an investigatory stop on myself. And the allegations there were battery and false arrest. And also, those are amended to 1983 claims, because that incident that took place on the street did not have a Monell claim. There was no actual arrest made, even though I was taken into custody, and I alleged that I was physically abused on the street and handcuffed and detained. And those events related to Map versus Ohio types of situations. There was no actual arrest. There was no actual traffic stop. It was an investigatory stop. Right. Then from that incident, and that was the first complaint against those officers, that incident, I was taken into this Plains police station for some reason, really no apparent legitimate purpose, to be interrogated for something. And I want to just back up just for a brief moment to give you a little bit of starting point of what happened here. I'm 65 years old, Judge, and I was a police officer. I was a police officer in this Plains for 13 years. I'm a night student. Right? And I went to night school. I was on the police department. I've been practicing law now for 29 years, mostly in the state system. And I was on the way home from going to a dancing class with my fiance on May 19th, about 11:15 in the evening, and I'm driving along. And I noticed a sports car in a lot of an automobile dealership at River Road and Oakton Street. I simply drove into that lot. This is on the first row nearest the street. I drove into that lot and stopped for 2 or 3 minutes to look at this yellow sports car, and then drove on my way. That's the whole basis of that. That's essentially what I did that evening that alerted the police to take me into custody on the street, that incident. All right. The second incident happens inside the police station. The officer that originally stopped me on the street took me in and turned me over to the detectives.
Were you with your fiancée all this time?
No, she wasn't with me. I mean, I was with her that evening.
I missed that.
Yeah. We went out for a dancing class.
Dance is over, you stopped and looked at the car.
And I was on my way home. Okay. Right, I was on my way home, and I saw this yellow sports car. I pulled in to take a look at it. The officer that stopped me, you know, asked for my driver's license and proof of insurance and wanted to know what I was doing in that lot. And I told him it was obvious I was looking at a used car. I was just there. The lot was fully lit. Anyway, that whole thing, after two more officers arrived and the sergeant arrived that was personally acquainted with me, because I've been in the city of Des Plaines for many years as a resident, as a police officer, as a city council member for two terms. The sergeant that was on the scene was personally acquainted with me, and she ordered me taken into the police station for some type of further investigation. So that's incident number two. Now I'm in the police station. I'm turned over to the detectives. And now I'm searched again by the detectives, abused by the detectives, and ultimately arrested by one of the detectives that alleges that I threw a toothpick at him, causing a battery. So there was never this incident that happened outside. There was never any official arrest made of any sort there. And the complaint there is about what they did. The incident inside, there was an actual arrest. So I faced 17 court appearances for that case of battery, and finally I represented myself through a jury trial and was found not guilty. In that case, I filed a one-count complaint in the law division of Cook County for battery against the police officer that made the arrest, and that was later amended to add 1983 counts. After that was amended, and I added Monell count on that. So the difference between these two circumstances, I have a bit of a dry problem.
So do I.
So what I think Judge Kendall failed to recognize is the difference, the whole burden of proof and the presentation of those two cases. The case on the street was so much different than the case that happened inside the police station, and it had in the case in the Monell, that a Monell count, and for me to try to get all these six police officers and present a case against all six of them for two separate incidents, it basically made it a tremendous uphill battle and very confusing when it came down to the presentation of the whole case and trying to convey to the jury who I was complaining about and when it happened and why I was complaining about those individual people. And I wound up with six police officers in the court, and it was like, what happened that you had all six of these people abused you in some way? It just became very difficult to pursue that case and prepare that case. It should have been two separate lawsuits at the start and should have stayed that way, in my view. All right. Now,
what was the cause of action in the first one? Just to stop, or what?
The first case I filed in the law division of Cook County was a simple battery case, a one count common law battery case against the officer inside the police station.
No, I'm talking about before he went. The first case, I guess, the first 19th.
Right, that case is what happened out on the street.
Yeah, what happened? Right. I mean, I didn't get. Was there some battery or something? Or?
Right. I filed the case against the three officers on the incident that happened in the street. On that case, I alleged a state battery against one officer, and I alleged a false arrest on a 1983 claim, and a physical abuse in 1983 came against those three. Now that went into the state court, then that came into, then went from there into the, was removed into the federal court, and then ultimately the other case, which was like months and months later, wound up being consolidated, and the time for the preparation of the two cases was so much different.
The other case was that was from the 20th.
The May 20th case, the incident took place inside the police station.
Even from the stop on to the police station.
It's exactly the
next day, I guess, right?
Right, the next day.
You were stopped late at night on the 19th, and then by the time you got to the police station, it's the 20th. Is that how those...
Right. So the whole, so there was a connection of these incidents simply because there were police officers involved in both, but there were separate kinds of cases. You know, the incident that took place on the street was a Mapp versus Ohio kind of situation, all right, primarily, all right. The incident that took place inside the police station was simply a simple battery, and then it grew into a 1983 cause of action for abuse, physical abuse and the false arrest. And later on, I tried to amend those complaints to add additional counts.
Now, you're starting to get into your rebuttal time.
Oh, geez.
I just want to...
All right. I could just blast through this. You know, I was thinking this over last night and listening to arguments on the computer. And I thought, what could I actually say this morning that would be so compelling that it would not be just simply repeating what I already said in my brief, in my reply brief, or that would clarify things. And really, what I've said in my briefs are what I have to say about this case. I have no new kind of data to present this morning other than basically paraphrasing what I've said earlier.
Why don't you tell us why you sent that YouTube video? I'm quite confused about that. What was the point of sending that?
Pardon me?
What was the point of sending that?
I think it was just the interest of it all. I was up.
It had nothing to do with your case.
No. Well, nothing to do with that case. It had to do with that type of practice of law. All right. The case was, I don't know if you had a chance to see that. The case I was up sometime 4 o'clock at night or 3 o'clock looking at YouTube, and I saw this video there that was a video from someone that showed a story of someone that was shot by the Chicago police in a subway. And it struck me as being very interesting for this whole thing that's in the press so much these days, the last few years, about police abuse and so forth. And I was involved in my own case.
Maybe too involved?
Pardon me?
Maybe too involved? Up at 4 in the morning?
Well, I wasn't necessarily working on that, my particular case only, but I just happened to see that. It may have been on a weekend. I think it was on a weekend, actually. Then this video was of great interest. It showed what happened with a police officer killing someone in the subway. And I thought it was just very interesting to me. Anybody that's doing this kind of legal work would find that interesting. If you're defending cities as a regular nature of your employment, I thought it would be interesting, and I still think so. I never could figure out why it would offend someone to send them a copy of that. Say, here's something you may find interesting. Your friend Wayne Adams. I don't see how that could possibly be offensive. But that issue is issue number 8. Now, I don't see how I could have offended anyone. But that's issue number 8. That issue is not of such a nature that would cause me to have a new trial in this matter. That's sort of a dispute as to why that would be sanctionable, why that kind of conduct would result in sanctions. So the first 7 issues in my appeal are directed to things that happened that I believe would cause me not to have a fair opportunity to present my case. That last issue about the sanctions was just inappropriately sanctioned. Now, that's not going to result in me having a new trial or another day to present my case. That's just a matter that needs to be looked at, I believe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess I'm over my time, correct?
Well, no, but you want to save some, you see, for your rebuttal.
All right. I just want to convey that thought what I really have to say is on the papers already. And I could just right now, trying to rush through a verbal presentation, just confuse myself or confuse the court. But I think the time I spent preparing the written documents, I have really stated what I need to say.
Okay. So, we're going to let Ms. Bednarik speak and Mr. Koenig, and then you're going to have another minute or so.
That's good. Thank you, Judge.
To respond. Okay, so thank you. So, good morning, Ms. Bednarik.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Lucy Bednarik. I am representing all of the defendants, appellees, in this matter other than Officer Dick Lalowski, and I'm going to be addressing all of the issues other than the appropriateness of the jury instructions and special interrogatory, which my co-counsel Bill Koenig will address. The first issue that I would like to bring up to this court is Mr. Adams' failure to comply with this court's procedural rules in his appellate brief, and it's our position that his failure to comply is grounds for dismissal of his appeal in its entirety. He received...
Well, all of the issues that he raises relate to the district court's rulings on various aspects of the case. And, you know, for that purpose, the lack of a complete summary of the underlying facts and accompanying record cites really isn't all that burdensome. So why don't you go on to your next point?
I will, Your Honor, other than pointing out that the jury instructions, the appropriateness of them are based on the underlying facts of the case, and he did not provide any testimony regarding that other than a small soundbite in one portion of his brief, which I think he has a burden to provide this court with more than that in order to challenge the appropriateness of the jury instruction as well as the special interrogatory. Your the court was asking about the appropriateness of the consolidation ruling by the district court. And the district court based her decision to consolidate both cases because the issues, parties, and events were obviously related, as Mr. Adams was explaining just minutes ago. The complaints reference each other. The underlying state law complaints reference each other. The claims were similar in both. There were state law battery claims, excessive force claims, and false arrest in both. The only difference was the Monell claim. And what the court did was allow, once the cases were consolidated, the trial date was pushed back a few months. Mr. Adams was given an opportunity to conduct discovery on his Monell claim, which he did, and he was able to fully explore everything that he wanted to explore at that time. What is significant is that he has not presented any evidence that he was prejudiced by the consolidation of the claims. In fact, he's not even challenging the fact that the Monell claim never even went to trial. The district court dismissed the Monell claim in a partial motion for summary judgment in October 2007. So I believe he would waive any issue to say that he was prejudiced by the fact that the Monell claim was not tried separately, or that the cases were tried together. And he, in his appellate brief, he makes this argument that the Monell claim should have been tried separately, that it should have been bifurcated, and he does not, he didn't address that before the district court. So it's our position that he did waive that argument. One of the other important issues that I'd like to address with this court is the district court's denial of Mr. Adams' request for leave to amend just a few weeks before trial. About 6 weeks before trial, he requested leave to amend a state law abuse of process claim, a malicious prosecution claim, as well as a Section 1983 malicious prosecution claim. When the district court denied his request to amend the complaint to add those counts, a few weeks later, and just 2 weeks before trial, he requested leave to add the city as a defendant, or to add a respondeat superior claim against the city. Now, the city had been dismissed, as I just said, in the Monell claim in October 2007, and they had been out of the case for several months. The district court properly denied Mr. Adams' request to amend at the short date because the claims were untimely, just a few weeks before trial. They would have been prejudicial to the defendants to add, and they were futile. Mr. Adams could have brought all of the claims sooner. He knew of the state malicious prosecution and abusive process claims against Officer Rockovich as early as October 2006, when he was found not guilty at the criminal trial for battery. And he also should have known of the respondeat superior claim as early as May of 2005, when he was originally arrested. He gave the district court absolutely no reason for why he didn't add them earlier, other than the fact that he just didn't think about them earlier. And that in and of itself is not a valid reason to amend at such a late date. The district court also pointed out in her ruling that, properly so, that his Section 1983 malicious prosecution claim would have been futile to bring because there is no such claim in the Seventh Circuit of the type that Mr. Adams wanted to bring, which is based on lack of probable cause only, and so she denied it on that basis as well as the fact that if the state law claims would not have related back, then they would be barred by the Tort Immunity Act. One of the other important issues, and I know I have only a short period of time, is Mr. Adams' request that this court reverse on the basis that his motion in limine regarding the use of the term traffic stop as opposed to investigative stop was improperly denied. And I think the district court properly pointed out that the mere use of those terms, investigative stop, traffic stop, by a police officer is not determinative of what actually happened and what the basis for why they should have made that stop was. Rather, the facts surrounding the stop is important, not what the actual stop is called. And I believe that I only have 10 minutes and I'm giving 5 minutes to my co-counsel, so I'm not sure whether this is I have exceeded my 10 minutes.
Not yet.
Okay. The second issue is whether or not, or that I'm bringing up now, is that whether or not the district court properly barred Mr. Adams from presenting evidence at trial that he was found not guilty at the criminal trial. The district.
Well, of course, as a practical matter, the jury was left to wonder what happened in state court.
Well, yes, that is true, but it is highly prejudicial for the outcome of the criminal trial to be brought up in the civil trial. There are different burdens of proof that underlie each of the civil and the criminal, and that whether or not he was arrested with probable cause is not determinative as whether he was found not guilty at the criminal trial. And the district court made that distinction. And it was supported by this court's decision in the estate of Moreland versus Dieter. He also argues that the results of the criminal trial were necessary for him to prove his damages. And there is substantial case law that says he can't the damages that would result from his initial arrest under his false arrest would be something that he obviously could recover. But if he took it further and said, my damages are the attorney's fees that I incurred at the criminal trial, well, then that would be more of a malicious prosecution claim, which he did not have and that at the time, and that the district court denied him leave to add. There was no evidence. There's some Seventh Circuit cases that he cited, or Northern District cases that he cited, that considered it, depending on if the prosecutor made an independent decision to prosecute, or if the prosecution went forward with false information from the police officers. But there's not been that charge here that the police officers omitted evidence from their reports, or withheld exculpatory evidence or anything of that sort. He's never made that charge, so that's definitely not at issue here. For all those reasons, I ask that this court not disrupt the jury trial or jury verdict. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Benarek. And now, Mr. Koenig. Good morning.
In response to Your Honor's question about the jury being left to wonder what the disposition of the charges were, they were instructed as to why they were left wondering. They were told it's not an issue in this case.
No, I understand that the court did give an appropriate limiting instruction, different trial courts exercise their discretion differently.
The jury, Your Honor, if I may, the jury was accurately instructed on the law. The instructions that were given were supported by the facts and the theories of recovery, and a special interrogatory which was given to the jury was also supported by the facts and theories of recovery. The instruction which is being challenged was defendant's instruction number 30, which we submitted to the court in reliance upon the Atwater versus City of Lago Visto case. And that was given as court's instruction at the docket entry 153 at page 32. That instruction was clearly supported by Atwater, which holds that an arrest for a non-jailable traffic offense, one can make a full-blown custodial arrest. That was extended after our jury verdict a couple months later by the Supreme Court in Virginia v. Moore, which said that you can make a full-blown custodial arrest for a non-jailable traffic offense even if it violates state law. So that instruction was supported by the case law. Mr. Adams says, well, Atwater never said anything about cuffing. Well, if you can make a full-blown custodial arrest, I submit to you that you can certainly cuff an individual. And under these circumstances, the record doesn't reflect any evidence from which a jury could reasonably conclude that it was inappropriate or that there were special circumstances in this case, such as the cuffs being applied too tightly, Mr. Adams being infirm or what have you. I would also point out that the objections which Mr. Adams raises before this court were not properly preserved. The objection to this particular instruction number 30, he never objected. At page 34 of his appendix, the court is discussing instruction 30, and he makes no objection to it. At page 33 contained in his appendix, the court is discussing defendant's instruction 29, which dealt with Devenpeck versus Alford, and that's where he objects, essentially saying this is not a traffic offense. The instruction, even instruction 29, was supported by the Supreme Court decision in Devenpeck. The jury found that Mr. Adams was speeding. The jury found that Mr. Adams, in a special interrogatory, committed a battery. As far as the traffic offense, the Supreme Court made clear in Devenpeck that since the arrest is an objective standard, one can support the detention under the Fourth Amendment, even for some reason other than the stated reason for the stop in this case. The fact that the officers may have made an investigative stop, they could certainly have justified the detention of Mr. Adams based upon the fact that he was speeding, and a jury found that he was speeding in this case. So I submit that the instructions, especially interrogatories, were supported by the law. And again, if Your Honors examine the specific portions in the record where in the instruction conference, at page 34, he did not object to instruction number 30, which is the only instruction that he's challenging in this case. The only instruction that he's objected to was instruction number 29. That was the instruction that we tendered to the court based upon Devenpeck versus Alford. If there's no questions from Your Honors, I'll sit down.
Nice to see you again, Mr. Koenig.
Thank you, Judge.
Long time, no see.
Sure has.
Thank you, Mr. Koenig.
Is it more fun to try cases up here than it was in Southern District?
That was a fun case, Judge. They're equally pleasurable.
Yes. How many minutes? Well, you've got a minute, but if you need to, we'll certainly give you that.
My issue number 6, it's regarding the jury instruction and the special interrogatory. And the instruction that I was complaining about says, under the Constitution, if a police officer has probable cause to believe that a motorist has committed a traffic offense, the motorist may be placed under arrest, handcuffed, and taken to jail without violating the constitutional rights of the motorist. This whole thing ties it all together when you see when we had these two cases, why they should have been kept separately, and then an instruction like this and a special interrogatory that asks the jury, do you find that probable cause existed to arrest plaintiff from the following offenses? And there's five things listed. And the police officers testified repeatedly that this was an investigatory stop. It wasn't a traffic stop. It was if anything, it was a Terry versus Ohio stop. And to give this jury an instruction that tells them you can be taken into custody and physically arrested for a traffic violation, even though, according to Atwater, even though you could simply have posted your bond on the street, if you're taken into physical custody, it still doesn't violate the Constitution, even though it may violate state law or state rules. That just confuses the jury to a point where there is no possibility I could get a fair trial or a fair understanding of what these two consolidated cases were all about. And we look at this special interrogatory. Do you find that probable cause existed to arrest the plaintiff for the following offenses? Criminal trespass to property, yes or no? Criminal damage to property. And where does this come from? I didn't object. I objected as much as I could possibly object. This whole case, I had an uphill battle. There was actually nothing went my way from the day I started this case in the federal system. And it wasn't my choice. I was in state court. Driving in excess of a posted speed limit. There was never any reference to driving in excess of a posted speed limit. The officer never said anything. It was an investigatory stop. driving without proof of insurance, battery to a police officer, all of it's combined into one special interrogatory, these two separate incidents. It just made it impossible for me to get a fair trial in this matter. I just needed to go back and be able to present my case in a way that the jury can understand what happened, what really happened here. That's all.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks to all our counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. And we're going to take just a short break.